The U.S. Supreme Court hears arguments today in a case testing whether states are immune from lawsuits for money damages when they violate the federal law that guarantees unpaid leave for workers dealing with a family crisis. Since its enactment 10 years ago, the Family and Medical Leave Act, known by the abbreviation FMLA, has allowed more than 35 million Americans to take up to 12 weeks of unpaid leave to care for a newborn, a newly adopted child, or a seriously ill family member. States are asserting that they are immune to the key enforcement provision, the right of employees to sue, not only for reinstatement, but for back pay. NPR Legal Affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg reports.
The case before the justices was brought by William Hibbs, a social worker employed by the state of Nevada. In 1996, his wife suffered a severe neck injury in an automobile accident. Medical complications soon jeopardized both her physical and emotional health. Any false move could cause the metal plate holding her head up to fatally puncture her esophagus. In severe pain, she became suicidal, and her doctor recommended that her husband care for her until her next scheduled surgery. William Hibbs and his colleagues all donated paid sick leave to help him, with the federal unpaid leave approved for later. But in November, he says, a new management team took over. They at first agreed that he would return 2 months later after his wife's surgery, he says, but 2 days after that conversation, Hibbs was visited by his new boss. She told him that his additional leave had been revoked and that he must report for work or be fired.
And I said, well, wait a minute. I have not used my Family Medical Leave Act. I talked to you the other day. I told you exactly when I was coming back. You said that was agreeable. And she said, well, you either be to work tomorrow or you're fired. I said, you can't do this. I already have my time approved. She goes, we can do anything we want. You can't sue us. We're the state.
Indeed, over the last decade, states have won unprecedented immunity from damage suits. Invoking the notion of states' rights, the Supreme Court has moved aggressively to limit congressional power by ruling that states are immune from such suits, which are the key enforcement mechanism of most civil rights laws. Thus, the court has ruled that states cannot be sued for back pay under the Age Discrimination Act or the Americans with Disabilities Act or even the Fair Labor Standards Act. A conservative majority of five justices has consistently ruled that Congress's power to authorize private lawsuits for damages against a state is strictly limited to cases in which Congress can demonstrate a history of state discrimination. Nevada Assistant Attorney General Paul Taggart will tell the Supreme Court today that the FMLA was not aimed at eradicating state gender discrimination. Rather, it was a general labor provision like the minimum wage law.
Congress can only make states subject to money damages lawsuits if it is reacting to constitutional violations by the states. And it's our view that, and I think it's borne out by the record, that Congress never focused on the question of whether states are engaged in unconstitutional conduct when they grant leave.
Nor, he maintains, was there any congressional finding of discrimination by the states.
Where, anywhere in the congressional history, is any discussion at all of state activities? There is none.
Not so, says Georgetown law professor Nina Pillard, who's representing Mr. Hibbs.
When Congress took up consideration of family medical leave in 1985, three states had any family leave law, and they were very, very minimal.
Those were the only such state laws, she says, and she'll argue that the FMLA was adopted in response to the surge of women in the workforce after the Supreme Court invalidated generations of laws that treated men and women differently in the workplace. Pillard will contend that even so, stereotypes of women as family caretakers remained a more subtle fashion of discrimination in state leave provisions, provisions that Congress found often worked to the disadvantage of women in matters involving childbirth and to the disadvantage of men in matters involving care of a sick family member.
One particularly striking example is that family leave was granted often only to women and not to men.
Indeed, Mr. Hibbs maintains that in his division, at least two women were given leave for a full year without penalty, while he was cut off after 5 months. Assistant Attorney General Taggart counters that most states now have family leave provisions of their own.
To ignore what Nevada has done and what her sister states have done for the last 30 years of participating in this revolution that has guaranteed women the equality that they're guaranteed by the Constitution is inappropriate in our view.
In other words, even if Nevada discriminated at the time the FMLA was adopted, it doesn't now and should not be subject to the federal law's damage provisions. But Nina Pillard counters that the federal law on family leave was the catalyst that forced state adoption of similar provisions. That, she says, does not invalidate the federal law and its minimums. Otherwise, the mere fact that a federal statute worked, that it promoted a new equality, would automatically mean it was null and void.
Under that logic, the fact that the states now have state-level laws against employment discrimination based on race or sex would mean that the federal government would have to repeal Title VII, the main equal employment opportunity law.
A decision in the case is expected later this year. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.